Season with the Patriots. For details on every Seahawks move this offseason, go to 710sports.com/tracker. The NFL says it plans to continue with the draft on April 23rd, despite calls from general managers across the league to push it back. Get the latest updates on the impacts of the coronavirus at 30 minutes past the hour on 710 ESPN Seattle from 97.3 Cairo FM.
Snapshot, brought to you by Coors Light, made to chill.
This is Bob, Dave, and Moore on 710 ESPN Seattle.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio.
Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Bob Stelton, Dave Wyman, and Jim Moore.
Welcome, everybody. It is Bob, Dave, and Moore here on 710 ESPN Seattle. The opening drive is brought to you by Cherish. Big show coming up today. We've got big things planned for you, a lot to discuss. Coming up at 3:30, a member of your Seattle Mariners, Austin Nola, who's a great story from last season. He's going to join us at 3:30. Of course, the professor, John Clayton, will join us at 4 o'clock, as he does every day. And then Michael Silver from NFL Network will join us at 5 o'clock, talk some NFL free agency with him as well. But do we have Dave with us? We were looking for Dave a moment ago.
Yeah. I am here, man.
Hi, Dave.
How you doing? How is everybody?
Doing great. I can hear the static in the background, which means Jim's here. Hi, Jim.
Hey, guys. Apparently, I'm getting a new computer tomorrow, and I just want you to know that it's not operator error on my end. It's a computer error because it's an older computer as opposed to the older operator who usually takes the blame in these cyber situations. But for a change, apparently, it's the equipment that I'm working with. And I know, you know, like a good worker shouldn't blame his equipment, but I'm going to do it anyway.
So the computer is what's creating the static? I thought it was your internet provider or whatever they were saying.
No, it's Comcast. I've got a good internet provider, but we'll see. I'm going to make a change tomorrow, and hopefully the delay will end on my end and on yours. And until then, we'll just we'll do the best we can.
All right. All right. Well, one quick reminder to everybody listening. We do appreciate everybody hanging with us through through the difficult circumstances that are going on. Again, we're all at our respective homes trying to do our best to create a diversion for you. And just remember, you now have radios in your homes, your smart speakers. You can just tell your smart speaker to play 710 ESPN Seattle or 710 AM. So if you find yourself in your home unable to leave, remember you can always listen to 710 ESPN Seattle on your smart speaker. You can download the app, which is powered by Dubin Law Group. Very convenient. It's free. It's there for you each and every day, and you can text the show throughout the day, 710-710. Well, the big news, I guess, today, guys, we saw the report from Ian Rappaport, Jermaine Ifedi going to the Bears on a one-year deal, and they're talking about moving him to guard. So I still, to this point, haven't seen any details money-wise, but a one-year deal, I've got to imagine he and his agent, much like we've talked about with Jadeveon Clowney being a little disappointed with what the market is, I've got to imagine Jermaine Ifedi thought he was in for a much bigger payday and maybe a long-term deal.
Well, yeah, and that's why he signed the one-year deal, I'm sure. And I don't know. It seems like I'll use an example, Justin Britt. You know, and maybe they moved him around. And when they moved him to center, I just thought, oh, man, it's over. He really was, I thought, pretty good his rookie year at tackle, playing right tackle. But they moved him inside to guard, and then it was bad there. And then he became a center, and I thought,
Dave,
oh, okay.
Dave, hang on. Just quickly, I'm curious because, sorry to cut you off, but it seemed like,
sure, no problem.
I feel like you're the only one that feels he was really good in his rookie year. It felt like everybody was kind of disappointed and felt like he was a bit of a liability, and that was sort of the impetus for him being moved and switching positions. But what did you see something in his rookie year that said otherwise?
I thought he was okay. I mean, he's a rookie, and, you know, you're facing, you know, some of the toughest, you know, other than like corner, you face these ridiculous athletes, receivers that can jump out of the stadium and can run and all that, just very athletic. And same thing when you're a tackle, you're facing some of the best athletes in the world. So, you know, I thought he was okay, but you're a much tougher grader than I am. But I thought, you know, for a rookie and that perspective, I thought he was good, And I thought he would take a step, you know, up the next year. And instead, they moved him to guard. So it can be done, I guess, is my point. Whereas, you know, because Jermaine Ifedi, I mean, he was guard, then he went to tackle. And I remember the whole thing about Cable trying to make him, you know, uncomfortable, which didn't make sense to me. But anyway, I was watching a couple of games that have been on. There was the Pittsburgh game and the Cleveland game, and he is one of the more penalized players in the NFL. He's in the top 10. And, you know, two of the penalties that he got not only cost the Seahawks 25 yards in penalty yardage, but also opportunity cost of about 60, 65 yards. And that's just watching two games. So, you know, like I said last week, I thought Jermaine was good, but he certainly wasn't great, and I haven't seen him take this huge, like, leap forward. But also, you know, you see that there's just not a lot of great talent, you know, in the NFL as far as tackles go. Jack Conklin signed the biggest deal, I think, with Cleveland, and, you know, the guy from Tennessee, and he was a really good run blocker, but kind of suspect as far as pass blocking.
Yeah, I'm sure. Boy, when you look at Jermaine Ifedi today, he had to have his tail between his legs signing that contract with the Bears. I don't know what the numbers are going to be, but if I'm him, I'm looking at George Fant, a guy who wasn't a starter in Seattle, and we love the jumbo package and tackle eligible and all that with Fant, but if I'm Ifedi, I'm raising my eyebrows and going, wait a minute, he's getting $10 million a year for 3 years with the Jets, and I'm getting a one-year contract from the Bears? For what, maybe $5 or $6 million if he's lucky? And not only that, my new team wants me to shift back to guard. So, yeah, I think we saw this coming. I think we knew this was going to be the last year in Seattle for Ifedi ever since they didn't pick up his fifth-year option. If they had done that, they would have had to pay him $10 million next year. So I'm not really going to miss him. We'll see how Brandon Shell, his replacement that they got from the Jets, does. But even if he's just a wash with Ifedi, even if you get similar numbers as you got with Jermaine Ifedi with Brandon Shell, you're going to be paying quite a bit less than you expected to with a starting right tackle in the NFL.
Yeah, and it would appear, just based on what we're seeing here, a one-year deal and still haven't seen the terms to this point, that it wasn't just local Seattle media and the 12s and Seattle Seahawks fans that were hard on Ifedi or had an opinion of him that was less than stellar. Otherwise, the contract he was offered would reflect that, right? I mean, you'd figure, all right, somebody, maybe we're rough on him and we see every moment, and somebody in another city is going to look at him and say, you know what, this guy has got a lot to work with and we can turn him into something special here. Obviously, that wasn't the belief. I didn't hear about teams beating down his door. I don't know how many teams they may have been discussing contracts with, but to ultimately end up with a one-year deal, which I can't imagine is for a ton of money, tells you that maybe, you know, the impression of him is not just a local one.
Yeah, well, I just in general would say this. I had a conversation with Tom Cable, and look, I still really respect Tom Cable, and I know a lot of people were really down on him, but, you know, he's done a good job, but he's just his, and I think, you know, like you bringing up the Brit thing, Bob, to me, it's expectations. So my expectations of offensive line play, I think that's the one place where you ask most people in the NFL, and they'll say, it's an epidemic that you have guys that you come out of college and you're going to have to like entirely retrain them. And then, you know, there are some really good, I mean, you look at Dwayne Brown, even Dwayne Brown gets beat. He gets beat for sacks. But, you know, if you're just like a turnstile, you know, I mean, that's one thing. But, you know, if, you know, your expectations are that Dwayne Brown is your standard, then you're going to be disappointed. Because I just don't think offensive line in general is that good in the NFL. And I think it's one position where, you know, maybe they should pay offensive line coaches more, because I think that's where the biggest struggle from everything that I talk, when I talk to scouts, talk to coaches, that's the case. So, you know, it's interesting to see how Ifedi is perceived by all 32, because I'll bet you it's not $10 million. George Fant got a 3-year deal for $10 million a year. There's no way that was based on his performance. It's hope. You know, and you always hear the thing, hope is a bad strategy. But, you know, I hope the best for George Fant. But, man, when he got paid that, I thought, wow, I don't know what's going on as far as the market goes for offensive linemen.
Yeah, it's sure a strange one with Effetti and now Clowney. Effetti taking as long as he did, and who knows how long it's going to take with Clowney. But I was just looking at the Seahawks' potential offensive line starters next year, and so you got Shell taking over for Effetti at right tackle, so you have a new guy there. Fluker at right guard, so you'll have some stability there. At center, we don't know what's going to happen yet. Still that speculation out there about Justin Britt. Maybe they'll restructure his contract or even consider him a salary cap casualty. And Finney, who they got from Pittsburgh, may take over there, or maybe he'll enter the competition at left guard where you've got Upati on his way out, or you might have Jamarco Jones there. I guess my point is you're going to have potentially three new starters on the offensive line. You're going to have two for sure, and it's going to be even more difficult to have all that continuity that you like to have on that offensive line, whether you're good, bad, or in between. They always talk about how important that is at that position group to have some familiarity with each other, and with the lack of a condensed training camp and OTAs being off the table, it appears at this point, it's going to be interesting to see how this all comes together for the Seahawks this year along the line.
Well, in cut number one, we've got Pete Carroll at the end of the season in a press conference talking about the hope he had for keeping this O-line intact.
It is important.
Yeah, I hope we can keep our guys connected here. You know, we got to. I don't want to see a big change there. You know, because we made good progress. We've got really good young guys. A couple guys got banged up this year that, you know, you haven't seen a whole lot. Jordan Simmons and Knox, you know, those guys coming back into the competition will really be good. Jamarco did well, and yesterday to see Phillip play like that too, that was really, really helpful for us going forward. So I think the whole group, it could be a really solid group coming back, and I'd like to see the guys that have been playing for us stay with us.
Yeah, it's, you know, we hear that from every offensive line coach, every player, and Dave, you've talked about it a bit. We talked to Big Ray about it. Obviously, there's a cohesiveness that is developed with offensive linemen. They work in concert together. It's unlike any other position group. Yet, year after year, there's a decent amount of turnover with the Seahawks offensive line. I mean, you've had your left tackle spot pretty well sewn up when you had Russell Okung. Now you've got Dwayne Brown. So that's been a nice spot for him. But you start looking, moving to the right from that spot, it's been a little different outside of Effetti, who's kind of been your guy on the right side. There's been a lot of shuffling going on there.
Yeah, I just think it's difficult. And I don't know how much, I mean, we can look into, you know, change and turnover in other NFL cities, because I'm sure it's pretty much talked about nationwide that's a problem. So, you know, the other thing that I think makes it even more difficult, too, is now with the lack of hitting. I mean, that's the one position where you really need to go full speed and you got to go full contact. And, you know, and I'm not talking about cutting guys in practice, because that's never been done. But, you know, that can be dangerous. You can roll up on a guy's knee. But, I mean, as far as getting the right fit, you know, which just means you're in the right position to do your job and block the guy that you're supposed to block. And if you're doing it in a walkthrough with no pads, it's just really hard to figure out what is and is not going to work once you get into a game. So that also makes it difficult. But, you know, I think everybody is, you see, it's, like I said, it's an epidemic of people, you know, changing, you know, offensive line, all the different positions. It seems like they kind of rotate in and out pretty much in every NFL city. And, you know, it's just, it's a challenge. But, you know, I don't, you know, we've talked about like backup quarterback. Where are the positions, you know, we've talked about that they kind of struggle with their first round selections, you know, but for the most part, they're doing a really good job, right? Because they're winning double-digit games and everything, so they're staying ahead of everybody else. The other thing I think I would throw in there, and I hate offensive linemen. I hated them my whole career, you know, but I'm going to go ahead and defend them and say,
they're,
you know,
a necessary,
like,
evil,
difficult.
Dave.
Yeah, okay, yeah, that's a good way to put it, right? So, but, you know, with Russell Wilson also, I think it makes it more difficult. We heard that from Lincoln Kennedy the other day. It's like, yeah, you want to know where that guy is. You just don't know where. You're having to read the defensive lineman's eyes and his movements. So that's what's difficult about playing offensive line. You know, I used to mess with offensive linemen in the run game as well, where, you know, if there's a guard coming to block you, he doesn't really know exactly. Let's say it's a sweep to the outside. He doesn't know where the running back is because his back is to him. So one of the things that I would do as a linebacker, I would like slow down, and then I'd get him to slow down and then hit the gas and, you know, fly past him. Well, I don't know if I was flying, you know, as fast as I could run anyway, but I could outrun guards. And so, you know, that's what makes it so hard for them. I think they have, you know, a really tough position, and especially tackles. Like I said, you're facing, you know, maybe the best athletes on the field, kind of like cornerbacks, you know. It's just one of those, and it's also a position where it's very glaring when you get beat. Very glaring. It's same, you know, same with corner. It's like you're kind of out there on an island, and when you're a tackle trying to block an edge rusher, yeah, I mean, you're going to get exposed. So it's, I think it's just a difficult position in general. But you know, I think the Seahawks have done okay. Going into last year, I thought, hey, this is maybe the first year where I think we were even making jokes about it, Bob, where it's like, hey, you're not going to have anything to complain about going in. But then, you know, they start getting banged up, and, you know, and then Britt goes down, and, you know, you had Yopati in and out. You know, Dwayne Brown missed a few games. So, and that's the one thing about Ifedi is that he was, you know, pretty reliable. But for the most part, they had good depth, we thought, last year. And now all of a sudden, you know, you're signing three guys that a lot of people have never heard of.
Jim, is there any part of you that believes we'll look at Ifedi in this deal and go, man, you know what? Maybe they should have held on to him if it was a one-year deal for... And again, we don't know the dollar amount, but let's just say it's $7 million, something like that. Is there any part of you that will have maybe a sense of regret that, you know, yeah, he wasn't the greatest. There were problems, but as Dave just pointed out, yeah, that happens to the best. That happens to Dwayne Brown. The guys get beat. He does commit penalties, and often they are ill-timed and they can kill drives. But if you're talking about a guy who's in there week in, week out, and he ultimately settles for a one-year deal at a reasonable price, whatever that is, do you feel like there'll be some sense of regret?
No, I don't think so, Bob. I'll throw it back to you here in a second, since you're the biggest offensive line critic, and I'm with you on that. And the thing that's always bothered me with the Seahawks offensive line is just how they put Russell Wilson in danger more than they should. And I understand that I've never really understood why you can't find a guy who's just as good at pass blocking as he is at run blocking. And your greatest asset, everyone knows, is Russell Wilson, and if you don't have him, you're toast. So I don't get that. But I'm looking right now at this new offensive line. If we project the new starters out there with Shell, Fluker, let's just say Britt's still on the team as your starting center, and they don't make him a salary cap casualty. And then let's say you've got either Jamarco Jones or the new guy from Pittsburgh at left guard, Finney, over Yopati, and then you still have Dwayne Brown at left tackle. Do you feel better about that offensive line or about the same? And I'll point out, too, that Shell, I think when we get these numbers, I think Shell's making around $5 million a year, and I bet Ifedi will come in right about that. And so if you're paying the same amount of money to the new guy coming in over Ifedi, you know you're going to have fewer penalties. And I was looking at Greg Bell's story in the News Tribune today, and he had the Pro Football Focus numbers. His numbers, Brandon Shell, slightly better than Ifedi in both the pass blocking and the run blocking. So to answer your question, I don't think I'm going to regret that Jermaine Ifedi's out there blocking for the Bears this year, whether it's Trubisky or anyone or Nick Foles or anyone else. I think I'm looking forward to seeing what Brandon Shell can bring this team. But, Bob, what do you think?
I don't know what to think because I haven't seen Shell play. I've looked at the same numbers you did. I read Greg's piece, and we've all sat here and debated how much stock do you put into Pro Football Focus, especially when it comes to offensive linemen. And, you know, some people look at it as gospel. Others say it's ridiculous. So having not watched the guy, I don't really know what to expect. Same with Finney. We got the, you know, we got the scouting report from Dave's guy, Keith Butler, telling us about Finney and what kind of a player he is. But as far as Shell goes, I haven't heard rave reviews about him, so I'm sort of just reserving judgment. He's new, so we haven't had a chance to sour on him yet. So I guess there's some level of promise attached to him because we just don't really... He's the unknown, right? He's just something different. He's something other than what has been frustrating for a lot of Seahawks fans. So I think in the minds of a lot of Seahawks fans, that's just a positive right there. Maybe it just turns out to be a scratch. Maybe he's just very similar in terms of what he does well and does not do well and mistakes he makes. I'm not setting the bar really high for him just because he's just such an unknown. We hadn't really heard his name. He's a guy who did get benched in the season. There are things you hear where you kind of go, okay, well, let's wait and see. It doesn't sound great. Maybe he's not awful. Maybe it's just a lateral move in the end.
Yeah, I'm looking at penalties, by the way. 11 out of the 12, top 12, are offensive tackles. And Jermaine Ifedi actually ranked seventh. So, but if you look at this list, I mean, there's some good offensive tackles that get penalties. Andrew Whitworth is third. He's been a mainstay for a long time. Bakhtiari in Green Bay is number seven. And I'm just throwing out, you know, Laremy Tunsil is number two. And I'm just throwing out names that people might, you know, recognize. But yeah, so anyway, Jermaine Ifedi, he was up there, but it's kind of also the cost of doing business. You know, you're gonna get those guys are gonna be the, you know, the most penalized players. So, but as far as, you know, O-line goes, I go ahead
quickly before we go to take two. Just give me a yes or no. I mean, and we got somebody texting in. You guys can text in 710-710. They said Jermaine Ifedi's a bust. He's a bust. Is he a bust, Dave, in your opinion? Yes or no?
I don't know. Do I have to answer?
I mean, you can mull it over. Jim can mull it over. I'm just curious. He did play.
He's not a bust.
Okay.
What's a bust? I mean,
I think it's your own definition. I mean, he was healthy. He was there. He played a lot of games. He was durable. He wasn't great. I don't think he was the worst offensive lineman in the league. I think he was okay, but he was a first rounder, which does carry a little different level of expectation, as we've talked about.
Yeah, it's just so hard to put, you know, like a number on those guys, because, you know, there's lots of things that are, you know, I always talk about zone defense, Bob, and I'll say, yeah, this isn't this guy's fault. A lot of times, you know, and I think it's probably the toughest position to grade. But again, I'll just say he was part of a number one run game in 18 and what, number two or three last year. So, yeah, I don't think he's a bust. I just think that he probably, you know, would be a guy, if he was a success as a first rounder, you would have re-signed him to a long-term contract.
All right, let's take two.
It's time to take two. Brought to you by Infinity of Tacoma at 5.
Take two.
Well, guys, tomorrow would have been MLB opening day, and starting tomorrow at 7 p.m., 710 ESPN is going to be airing some Mariners Classics games, starting with 2001 opening day, which also happened to be Ichiro's major league debut.
That's a pretty cool thing. I mean, listen, everybody's looking for things to fill the gaps for sports fans right now. If you watch ESPN, they're doing, you know, top 10 lists of different events, and they're replaying different classic events in various sports. And, you know, everybody's in. It's kind of a cool opportunity for people to relive big moments, whether we're talking locally with the Mariners or nationally, you're watching ESPN and, you know, classic tournament games or fights or what have you. So everybody's looking to fill the gaps. I think it's a cool chance for people to reflect on some of the positive moments for the Mariners, which, you know, let's be honest, there haven't been a ton of positive moments in the past decade, so I think it's a pretty cool thing.
Yeah, I didn't think that would work necessarily, and it has for me anyway. I've loved on the NFL Network, they're playing, you know, replayed, mentioned the Pittsburgh game, the Cleveland game, so yeah, I think it'll fill that void for a lot of people.
I'm excited about it too. I mean, you just look at last night I was watching bowling, and I was getting into bowling, so that tells you where I am. And I'm excited to see the Mariners again, and it is weird to think that, man, it's going to start tomorrow, or it should have. So MLB Network, they're replaying some World Series games. It'll just be fun to see baseball on the flat screen again.
All right, and tragic news out of WSU today, as Bryce Beekman, a senior on the football team, was found dead in his apartment. The cause of death has not yet been determined.
Incredibly sad story. I mean, I don't even really know what to say about this. And Jim, obviously you've got an attachment to the program that Dave and I don't. I don't know a ton about this player, but you're talking about a really young man losing his life, and we don't know what the cause is to this point, but I don't know what to say other than just tragic and incredibly sad news.
Yeah, boy. And just, you know, 2 years after Tyler Hilinski's suicide, we don't know the cause of death, but 22 years old. He started in 13 games last year, had an interception against Oregon State in a 54-53 win. And it's just, boy, your condolences to his family. And I suppose we'll get details about what happened, but it's just it's a sad day for the Cougs today.
We lose Bob?
It looked like he connected back again, but we might want to throw it to break here.
Yep. All right, well, coming up next on Bob, Dave, and More, we'll talk to Austin Nola. That's next on 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to Bob, Dave, and More on 710 ESPN Seattle.
Streaming through the 710 Sports app and on 710sports.com.
Now here are your hosts, Bob Stelton, Dave Wyman, and Jim Moore.
I'm excited to talk to this guy. I think, for my money, the best story of last year for the Seattle Mariners. It is Bob, Dave, and More here on 710 ESPN Seattle. And joining us now on the Zeke's Pizza Hotline, he's listed. I just looked up his page on ESPN, and they've got him listed as a first baseman. He's a catcher. He's a utility player. He can do it all. He's Austin Nola. Austin, how are you, man?
I'm doing well. Thanks for asking. How are you guys doing?
We're doing good. We're all in our homes doing the show from home. A little bit of a delay, so hopefully we'll be able to work through that. We really appreciate you taking time with us.
No problem.
Your story last year was so cool, man, and obviously, you've had a chance to reflect now. I mean, you're a guy that spent the majority of your career in the minor leagues. You got your first taste last year, the big leagues. You play 79 games. You put on a show. You hit double-digit home runs. You hit for a great average. You can play everywhere. It just seemed to be one of those feel-good stories. And I'm wondering, as you look at it now, how much different is it? Because you were in the moment, and I don't know how much you were able to really reflect on it at the time. But now that there's been time that has passed, how do you feel about last season?
I thought it went well. It was definitely fun to get my first taste of the big leagues. I've been waiting so long for it, and I just had a lot of good people, backing me and supporting me through this whole journey. And I couldn't be more thankful for family, friends, for teammates, coaches along the way that has helped me. And that's what I really look back now. It's not of the baseball portion. It's more of those people that reached out and to help me and to keep fighting for me. And that's one thing I really appreciate.
Yeah, Austin, finally getting called up at age 29. I got to imagine, like you said, you got a lot of people that supported you. But what was that day like when you got that message, that phone call, whatever it was, finally getting called up to the big leagues? You're 29 years old. It's a long wait, but man, that had to have been gratifying. What was that moment like, and who did you talk to? Did you call your parents or friends or what?
Yeah, it was, I didn't really believe it at first. I called my parents and they had no clue. They didn't believe it either. We'd been waiting for that call for so many years and it never came. And last year was the first time. So when it did come, it was like, hey, it can't be right. It's not going to happen. And then it happened. So I called my mom and dad, called my brother. Then I ended up calling, my catching coach who with the Marlins helped me out so much and was the one who, got me into catching. And he gave me some words of advice, and it was a surreal moment. I'll never forget it, but I don't think it kicked in that I was in the big leagues till Olsen hit me a line drive shot at first base that really summed things up, like, okay, this is baseball again. So
yeah, you had a really good interview with Shannon Dreher. There's a video interview, 710sports.com, if people want to check it out. And you were talking to Shannon about how you used to throw inside the house with your brother, and if you couldn't find a baseball, you'd be throwing lemons or oranges. And it sounded like you guys were so good at it that you never broke anything. And what I'm wondering, okay, so your brother is a pitcher with the Phillies, and I was looking at the schedule, and I know things are going to change with the schedule because of the coronavirus, but you're still scheduled to face the Phillies. What do you think it's going to be like when you get in the batter's box to face your brother?
Oh, yeah, we talk about it all the time. I catch him in the off season. That's my throwing partner, so I lived with him this off season. So that was I got more dirt on him again. So we joke and laugh about it. But last time I faced him, we were in college in an inner squad, and I got him pretty good off the double off the wall. So I got bragging rights so far right now, but he's really good. I mean, obviously you've seen he's pitched, you know, I think 5 years in the big leagues and had a lot of success. So it ain't going to be easy, that's for sure, if given the opportunity.
Was there ever a doubt in your mind, Austin? Did you ever get to a point where you were setting deadlines like, listen, if I don't get a call up by the age of 30 or 29 or 31 or anything like that, I'm going to start thinking about life after baseball? Or was it baseball or nothing? I don't care how long it takes, I'm going to get there.
Yeah, I never set deadlines ever on myself, but there was a moment in 2015, I would say, in AAA that I wasn't having fun with the game, and I kind of wanted to be done with it. I figured this is not the game for me, but I decided to stick it out and play. I think I just ended up learning to love the game more. I wasn't loving it as much early in my career, especially in AAA at the time. But then I just figured out how to go out there and improve, and that's what the focus was the process of improving every day, the little goals, the little achievements. I was like, if I can just do that every single day, get that feeling of gratification of getting a little bit better each day, I can stick in this game as long. I don't have to put deadlines. I don't have to worry about getting to the big leagues. It doesn't matter, because that's the fun part of it, and that was what drove me through each day, was the little things, the little days, the little achievements, the little steps. And that, for me, that's all worth it. That still makes the game fun.
Austin, this delay is really disappointing for a lot of people too. You know, there's things that they were looking forward to, and so, you know, for you, how are you handling that part, and what are you doing to kind of keep yourself mentally and physically in shape during this time?
Yeah, the physical stuff's probably the easier part. That's for sure. It's just going out there doing our job every day of working out, keeping the body moving, healthy. The tough part's the mental portion, because you're not getting the game reps. So a lot of it's rehearsals, visualization type stuff that, you know, you can try to mimic. And I'm just trying to stay focused on the mental side. And, like, this is a good time for reflection, a good time to really lock in on the values of why I'm here, why I'm playing baseball, why, you know, I'm trying to be the best I can be in all parts of life. And it's a time to take a step back for me. And that's been helped to keep my mind, you know, strong, is focusing on the full part of it, because there's a lot bigger things in baseball, and we're kind of seeing that right now in this time.
Austin, when you had that interview I was talking about with Shannon Dreher, you mentioned, and I'm hoping you can help me out, because I've got a couple of kids that play high school baseball, and one of them used to be a catcher, and then he burned out on it, and so he's playing outfield and infield. And I said to him, I go, you know, everybody's an outfielder, everybody's an infielder, but not everybody's a catcher. And it sounds like you had a moment, there was something that happened where you realized you knew that you were a catcher.
Yeah, I did. It was 2000. The exact moment wasn't this moment I'm talking about, but this led to the moment. It was 2016. I was playing shortstop, second, and third. It was the first year in my career that I got platooned as an infielder. I played shortstop all the way through the minor leagues to AAA, played shortstop in AAA in 2015 the whole year. And then 2016, I started platooning and kind of bouncing around. And that's when I started seeing the writing on the wall, like, man, it's really, really hard to get to the big leagues as a utility player to stay. And so I talked to the hitting coach, who at the time, Paul Phillips, he was a catching guy as well. And he really shot me honest on it, was straight up with me about the whole deal, told me everything I needed to know about where I was headed. And he said, you can take it or leave it. I can help you with catching if you want to take the opportunity. So I did, and reluctantly at the time, because I didn't truly believe in it, honestly. And not believing in it was probably why it took me a little bit longer to get to that breaking moment, which would have been 2018 in AAA. I was catching. We were playing the Memphis Redbirds in New Orleans, and they were the best team in the minor leagues by far, over every minor league team. I think they ended up winning it that year. And I felt like their lineup was like a big league lineup, and I still was trying to figure out what I was doing behind the plate. I didn't even know what I was doing half the time. But our starting catcher ended up getting hurt on Saturday night in about the third inning. So I came into the game and caught the rest of the game. We ended up winning the game. And then I didn't know that I was going to be catching that morning, because you don't usually catch the morning after playing the full night game. And I saw my name in the lineup, and I was a little nervous. I was like, I'm not prepared for this. I didn't feel like I was prepared. Usually a lot of times I spend a lot of time in the video room and doing this and that. But I went into the game basically feeling unprepared, and the game flowed. And I didn't think about anything, and that's when I realized that I think this catching thing might actually be the real deal. So that was the moment, the defining moment. I'll never forget it.
Well, Austin, it was a lot of fun to watch you last year, as we said. It's such a great story, and couldn't be happier for you. Hopefully we get a chance to talk to you again soon about what is happening on the field and sports and baseball resume. So we wish you nothing but the best and look forward to talking again soon. Thanks so much for your time.
Yes, sir. I appreciate that. Thank you.
There you go. Austin Nola of your Seattle Mariners. Great story from last year. Finally getting a crack at the big leagues at the age of 29 years old. Coming up, we were discussing how the Seahawks have done in free agency so far. We were talking about that earlier, but how about that running back position? We've touched on it a bit here and there, but let's get deeper into that. What do they need? They need a veteran. They need a draft pick. They need both. Talk about that next with Bob, Dave, and more on 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to Bob, Dave, and more on 710 ESPN Seattle.
Streaming through the 710 Sports app and on 710sports.com.
Now here are your hosts, Bob Stelton, Dave Wyman, and Jim Moore.
Coming up at 4 o'clock, the Professor John Clayton will join us, as he does every day here with Bob, Dave, and more on 710 ESPN Seattle. Hopefully everybody is having a decent time while we're on quarantine and finding ways to entertain yourself. Maybe we'll get into some of those discussions. Dave had some interesting pre-show comments about what he did to entertain himself last night. We'll see if we get into any of that. But right now, let's talk about the Seahawks running back position. We've touched on this here and there, but haven't really gotten deep into this. First of all, Dave, I'll just start with you. Is this a position you feel like, A, they need to address, B, they need to address it in the draft, C, they need to address it in the draft, and a veteran? Which of those three options is the best to you? Do you think it's a combo of all three?
Well, no, I actually think that they need to address it in the draft, because, you know, they still, for whatever reason, like CJ Procise. You have Homer coming back, who was pretty promising as a rookie, and then, you know, it just depends on the health. Really, I mean, I can't really answer it until I know, you know, and they probably don't either. I mean, how are they going to handle this? I feel like Chris Carson is going to come back, because here today I was watching the Cleveland game, and, you know, there's a lot of discussion about that the Seahawks were looking at Nick Chubb, and, you know, there is some, you know, thought that maybe some people wanted Chubb and others wanted Penny, but, you know, Chubb is the better. He's the better running back, but watching him and then watching Chris Carson on the other side, in my opinion, Chris Carson's the best running back. He's better than Chubb. He's probably not better than Christian McCaffrey. And, you know, Derrick Henry had a big year, but I love Chris Carson. The way he runs, he's just so versatile. He can do so many different things. And with Chubb, he's a great cutback runner, and, you know, he has got some good sense. But to me, I'll take Chris Carson every time. But, you know, the reason why I say the draft is I think they're okay. Like, I don't think it would be, like, crazy if they didn't even, I mean, they'll bring somebody in. But the guys that they have to choose from right now, you know, there's four pretty solid choices there. It all depends on them coming back from the injury. But that's also with, you know, for Penny, I feel like it's kind of, it's time. I mean, and it's going to be tough for him coming off this knee, but he's got to prove himself this year. He's really got to take a huge step forward. And the good news is, if you do address it that way in the draft, you can get running backs late. I mean, shoot, the Seahawks have done that more than a few times, where they've gotten a really good running back late in the, and as bad as, you know, we talk about, well, they haven't been great in the first round. They sure have been great in those later rounds and gotten some good bargains at running back.
Yeah, I'm just looking at it, though, Dave, and I'd like to see him get a running back in free agency. And I saw Michael Sean Dugar from The Athletic. He had a list of free agents he'd like to see the Seahawks pursue. And on his list was Devontae Freeman from Atlanta. And when you look at his numbers, 656 rushing yards, 410 receiving yards, 6 touchdowns for the Falcons. And we remember Freeman. We've seen Freeman in games against the Seahawks and how explosive he can be, how dynamic he is. So I just think that they need a veteran guy to come in here, especially with Penny. The possibility that Penny doesn't start the season, he might start it on the PUP list. You might not see Rashad Penny until October. And you got Chris Carson. You have injury concerns with him. You know he's going to be back, or you think he's going to be back for training camp and good to go at the start of the season. But then you're down to Travis Homer. Procise is still a free agent. We don't know if he's coming back or leaving. So you need to do something there. I'd like to see a veteran guy come in here and then maybe in one of the later rounds do like you did last year with picking Homer and get another running back then.
Well, before we move on, let me ask the question that will inevitably show up on the text line. What about beast mode? Why don't you guys like beast mode? He had 4 touchdowns last year. Give him a full off season to prepare and look at what he can do in a full season. What do you say to that, Dave?
Well, I think he looked a lot slower. And, you know, I don't know if the age is getting to him. And it would just be a matter of whether he really just wants to come back and just to play and that he really loves the game. So I do like that part about it, that, you know, he's become a better teammate. And I think he's hungrier and he missed it. You got a kind of a glimpse of what it's like on the outside, and that can fuel him. But I don't know. I know he wants to come back, but I'm not sure if that's going to be in the cards or not. I feel like Pete wouldn't mind having him there. I wouldn't. Why not? You know, why not have him come back and go through camp?
Jim?
Anybody there?
Well, Bob, Yeah, I thought Bob was going to break there. I'm sorry. I know I'm out on beast mode. I like what he did last year, but I'd like to see a little younger guy and not go with a temporary fill-in guy. I mean, he did a great job last year. You appreciate everything he did, but I'd like to see him go in a different direction this year.
Yeah, I tend to agree with you there, Jim. All right, coming up, was the professor surprised by the one-year deal for Jermaine Ifedi? I'm going to go ahead and make a bet. He's going to say no. We'll see for sure. That's coming up with Bob, Dave, and more on 710 ESPN Seattle.